That whole climbing the walls thing, it wasn't for me. But climbing, I did. Kicking things, breaking things, rehearsing words and speeches I would say, avoiding suits who called and called, telling me that I needed to make a statement about my current family situation. It was my issue, my life, my wife. No one else mattered. Not even my country. A week into the delight called heartbreak, I decided to bend the rules and rush fate. She was going to hate me for it, but frankly, she had enough reason to want to spit in my face even before my next stunt. On the seventh day of separation, I dragged Felix White in all his sweaty, shiny-faced glory to accompany me to Arthur's house, carrying an urgent search warrant. The thing missing? My fucking wife. White had no real grounds to issue a warrant other than he didn't want me to dish out the dirt on him. Forever the double agent, he texted Arthur hours before, so the mobster actually dragged himself back home to be there when I came over. Anyway, that was the story of how I came knocking on Francesca's door with the chief of CPD, a warrant, and two cops. And they said romance was dead. When Rossi opened the door, his forehead was so creased he looked like a bulldog. He slid his head between the cracked doors and tapered his eyes into slits.
"Senator, to what do I owe the pleasure?"
He completely disregarded White, knowing damn well why the letter compromised him. "Now's not the time to play games," I smiled coolly. "Unless you really want to lose. Let me in or send her out. Either way, I'm seeing her tonight."
"I don't think so. Not after you paraded that Russian whore in front of the entire city, leaving your pregnant wife at home."
I didn't know. Why I was explaining myself to him was beyond me. If he was the moral police, Michael Moore was a goddamn health guru. "At any rate, I've been trying to reach her for 7 days, and I have it on good authority that you want to open up before I do something you'll regret."
"You will never do it. Not with your pregnant wife in the picture."
Arthur had the audacity to flash me a taunting grin. White coughed from beside me.
"Mr. Rossi, if you don't let us in, I'll have to arrest you. I have a court order to search your house."
It was apparent that one person on the threshold believed I'd throw my father-in-law to the wolves. Slowly, Arthur pushed the door open and allowed me to walk in. White remained behind me, shifting his weight from foot to foot like a teenager wondering how to ask a girl for a prom date. The man possessed the charisma of a can of soda.
Should I wait here?"
White stuttered. I waved him off. "Go back to pretending you're good at what you're doing."
"You sure?"
He wiped the sweat off his forehead, the blue vein in his neck still pulsing.
"You're wasting my precious time and what's left over of my patience. Go."
Arthur led me to his office, giving me his back. Last time I'd been in his office, I demanded his daughter's hand. As I walked up the staircase, the memories flooded in. It was on the landing where we shared one of our earlier banters. At the top of the stairs, I recalled how I clasped her delicate wrist in my hand and tugged her down forcefully after I thought she'd cheated on me. Fucking idiot. Going around labeling White and Bishop as stupid when you've proven to be a clown more than one time in the span of your short marriage. I knew Francesca was somewhere in the house, and I longed to see her pink smile and hear her throaty laughter that did not match the softness of her being. "Give me one good reason why we're heading into your office and not into my wife's old room," I said when my mouth cleared from the fog of everything my wife. "Despite our differences, my daughter cares very much for my approval. And my giving it to you would help your chances when you talk to her. Now, Senator Keaton,
We both know it's long overdue that we settle the score. He stopped by the door to his office and motioned for me to walk in. Two of his muscle guys stood on each side of the door. Get rid of them, I said, still staring at him. He didn't break our gaze as he snapped his fingers, making both of them descend the stairs silently. We got into his office, and he closed the door halfway, obviously not trusting me not to throttle him with my bare hands. I understood him perfectly. Even I had difficulty predicting how I'd react, depending on the outcome of this visit. He leaned against his desk while I took a seat on the couch in front of him, spreading my arms over the headrest and making myself comfortable. I knew two things with certainty. One, today was the day my love for my wife was going to be tested. Two, I was going to pass with flying fucking colors.
Francesca. Like a moth to a flame, my feet dragged me out of my room and to the hallway the minute I heard my husband's gruff tenor. His voice was a poem, and I drank every word as if my life depended on it. I caught his back, his broad shoulders, and tailored suit as he glided through the corridor, ushered by my father, into his study. I counted 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 10 seconds before I tiptoed my way to the study. Weeks of watching how Ms. Sterling eavesdropped had taught me some invaluable tricks. My barefooted figure was pressed against the wall, and I took shallow, measured breaths. My father lit a cigar. The aroma of burnt leaves and tobacco hit my nostrils, and nausea washed over my gut. God, I felt sick every time someone breathed in my direction. I peeked into the room, fighting the bile bubbling in my throat. My father leaned against his desk, my husband on the red velvet settee in front of him, looking relaxed and nonchalant as ever. My husband, metal and steel. Formidable and untouchable. With a stone-carved heart, I'd do anything to soften.
I suppose you think that you can walk into her room and claim her back. Hang White and Bishop over my head again as leverage, my father said, puffing on his cigar, his legs crossed at the ankles.
He had yet to acknowledge my existence since I'd moved back into the house, but he didn't let that deter him from blackmailing my husband. With every fiber of my body, I wanted to burst through the door and set the record straight. But I was too humiliated and hurt to risk another rejection. Wolf might have come here to let me go, and I was done begging.
How is she doing?
Wolf ignored his question.
She doesn't want to see you,
my father replied curtly, sending another waft of smoke into the air and ignoring the question at hand.
Have you taken her to the doctor? She hasn't left the house. What the hell are you waiting for?
Wolf spat.
As far as I can remember, Francesca was old enough to get pregnant. She is therefore old enough to book an appointment with an OBGYN. Not to mention, if anyone should help her, it should be the man responsible for her dire situation.
Dire situation? My nostrils flared, hot air coming down from them like fire. It was the moment in which it dawned on me that my father was completely irredeemable. He didn't care for me or the baby. The only thing he cared about, ever, was the outfit. He loved and adored me when I was his puppet. And at the first sign of defiance, he discarded me and shook off any responsibility toward me. He sold me. Then lost his interest in me when he could no longer marry me off to another strong Italian family. Wolf, however, stuck around through thick and thin. Even when we antagonized each other. Even when he thought I'd slept with Angelo and saw me kissing him. And when I defied him again and again and again. The word divorce never left his mouth. Failure wasn't an option. He showed me more loyalty than my father did.
Good point,
Wolf stood up. I'll take her to the doctor right away. You will do no such thing. In fact, you will not be seeing her tonight at all, my father retorted. Wolf strolled toward him unflappably, stopping a few feet from my father and towering over his head. Is that her request or yours? Her demand. Why do you think you haven't heard from her yet? My father put his cigar in an ashtray, sending a plume of smoke in Wolf's face as he spoke. She requested I make sure that you grovel properly. Let me guess, you have plenty of ideas. I do. My father unknotted his ankles, pushing off the desk so he was nose to nose with Wolf. I wished I could see my husband's face at that moment. My father was lying to him, and he was too smart not to see that. Then again, love was like a drug. You didn't think clearly under the influence. I'll let you see Francesca if you comply. And if I don't? White can personally come and arrest me today, and you can burst through Francesca's bedroom door armed with police force. I'm sure she'd appreciate it, especially in her current state. Wolf was silent for a moment. Do you realize she misses you? He asked my father. My heart clenched painfully. God, Wolf. Do you realize that I'm a businessman? My father retorted. She's a damaged asset. We all have a price tag, Fabio Nucci. He laughed in my husband's face. I was born on the streets and left at the steps of a church door to almost die. My mother was a prostitute, and my father, who knows what he was. Everything I have, every square foot in this house, every piece of furniture, every fucking pen, I've worked for. Francesca had one job, to be obedient. And she failed. Because I set her up for failure. Wolf raised his voice, spitting in my father's face. That may be, but her only value to me right now is to be a pawn against you. You see, I've made the mistake of undervaluing a person once in my life, when I decided to foolishly let you live. Something dropped between them, and it thudded against the silence of the room. Jesus, he actually said it. My father regretted not killing my husband. Why didn't you? Wolf seethed. Why did you let me live? You were frightened, Nucci, but you were also strong. You didn't cry. You didn't piss your pants. You even tried to snatch one of my men's weapons. You reminded me of my young self when I ran on the streets barefoot, stealing food, pickpocketing, and working my way up. Hustling to the core and making ties with the outfit. I knew you had a chance to survive this part of the neighborhood. More than that, I knew you were a savage. Wolf Keaton plays nice with the law, but let's admit it. Fabio Nucci is inside you, and he is out for blood. I will never be your ally. Good. You make a fascinating enemy. Whatever you need me to do, get it over with, Wolf barked. My father leaned back, clucking his tongue and tapping a fist over his lip. If you truly love my daughter, Senator Keaton, if you sincerely care for her, you will strip from the one thing you never part ways with. Your pride. What are you asking? I could practically envision Wolf's jaw as it locked in anger. Beg for her, son. Kneel. Papa lifted his chin, somehow looking down at Wolf, despite my husband being several inches taller. Beg like you made me beg for her when you took her from me. My dad begged for me? I do not beg, Wolf said, and I knew he meant it. Even my father knew better than to ask for something like this. He set Wolf up for failure and doomed my marriage by asking that. Wolf never bowed to anyone, much less my own father. I was going to burst in the door and set the record straight when I heard Papa speak again.
Then you don't love my daughter, Senator Keaton. You merely want your possession back. Because as far as I recall, she did a lot of begging and groveling when you took her from this house as your prisoner.
I bit down on my lip, resting my forehead against the doorframe. It hurt me to see Wolf hurting, but it pained me even more that I understood why he couldn't do it. Why he couldn't beg the man who had ruined his life. It wasn't just about his pride and dignity. It was also about his morals and everything he stood for. About his family. My father had stripped him from his pride once in front of his brother. He was not going to do it again.
You're not doing this because of her. You're doing this because of you, Wolf accused, point blank.
My dad braced the edges of his desk behind him as he stared at the ceiling, contemplating this.
Why I'm doing this shouldn't matter to you. If you want her, you will stop at nothing, much less the floor.
Tears prickled my eyes once again. My father was humiliating him, and as much as I wanted to step inside and order them both to stop this, I couldn't. Because my father wasn't wrong about one thing. Wolf always held the power in my relationship with him, and if he couldn't let go, even once, was this really a marriage? Or was it a captive and master, glorified under the flattering light of lust? Slowly, I watched, to my utter shock, as Wolf began to lower himself down to his knees. I choked on my breath, unable to tear my eyes from the scene unfolding in front of me. My husband, the proud, take-no-bullshit, arrogant bastard, was kneeling, begging for me. What's more, he didn't look an inch less superior than he did walking into this room. He tilted his face up, allowing me an angle from which I could see him clearly. He was the picture of conceited, his regal features sharp and open. His eyes were determined, his eyebrows arched in mockery, and his entire composure was unimpeachable. Based on their faces alone, you couldn't tell which one of them was bowing down to the other.
Arthur,
his voice boomed in the room.
I beg you, please let me talk to your daughter. My wife is, and always will be, the most important thing in my life.
My heart burst in my chest at his words, and I quivered, feeling the heat of 1,000 suns warming me from the inside.
You will never make her happy for as long as you hang my sins over her head, my father warned.
My husband was still on his knees, and I couldn't stop the tears anymore. They rushed down in the form of a sob. I slapped a hand over my mouth, afraid they'd hear me. Wolf smirked, his eyes flashing with determination.
I do not intend to do that anymore, Arthur. Does that mean you will stop messing with my business? That means I will make an effort to play nice for her.
What about White and Bishop? My father asked.
I'll do whatever I see fit with them.
I can take Francesca away.
No, you can't,
Wolf interfered, cutting him sharply.
The only person who is in a position to take Francesca away from me is Francesca herself. It's her choice who she wants to be with, not mine. Definitely not yours. You've killed my brother, then my parents. My wife is where I draw the line. You cannot take her. I will unleash hell if you do.
I closed my eyes, feeling my body swaying from side to side. I hadn't eaten all day, and the scent of the cigar made me want to throw up.
Go to her,
my father said brokenly. My husband got up on his feet. Then, for the second time in my life, I swooned. Chapter 19. Francesca. I woke up cocooned in my husband's arms. He sat on the king-sized bed, my head resting on him in the exact same position we were curled in when we were in the barn, when he showed me Artemis. His spicy cologne and distinctive male scent engulfed me in comfort, and I pretended to be asleep a little longer, prolonging the uncomfortable conversation that waited at the end of my slumber. He dragged the tip of his fingers over my back through my shirt, pressing a kiss to my hairline. I visited the memory of him kneeling in front of my father, telling him that I was the most important thing to him. Warm honey coated my heart.
I know you're awake,
I heard my husband murmur to my temple. I groaned, shifting in his arms. The thought that these arms were wrapped around Karolina Ivanova a week ago made me want to throw up all over again. I propped myself on my forearms, shooting him a tired look.
You're pregnant.
He looked down at my stomach as if he was expecting to see a bump. Seeing his face again was the greatest gift I'd ever been given. It was absurd to think I dreaded said face the morning after the masquerade. Shortly after, he became my favorite thing about myself. I became his reminder that there was something more than vengeance and justice in this world. We were codependent, and we had to coexist. One without the other was a dormant being. To be alive and not really living was a terrible curse. It's yours. I put my hand on his for emphasis.
I know.
He ran the tip of his nose along mine, gathering me in his arms as though I was something great and precious, and hugging me close. Does that make you unhappy? I sniffed.
Becoming a father? I always thought it would. I was sure life ended when parenthood began. But that was before I found someone worthy to start a family with. I'm still not entirely sure about my abilities when it comes to parenthood. Luckily, I know my wife will be the best mother this planet has to offer.
Silently, my eyes raked the room. There was so much I wanted to say, but I knew that it could break something that was not yet even glued.
What about you, Nem? Are you happy being pregnant?
I straightened, swallowing my fear and letting the words rip from my throat before I lost my courage. I'm unsure. We're constantly fighting. We set a world record in miscommunications. And you just slept with someone else a week ago to get back at me, and not for the first time. I kissed Angelo last week, furious with the truth about you and my father. But I didn't take it any further. We're volatile and unfaithful. We don't live in the same wing.
We will,
he cut me off.
If that's what you want.
We need some time to think. I needed some time apart from him, not because I didn't love him, but because I loved him too much to make a conscious, healthy decision for our baby.
There's nothing to think about. I didn't sleep with Karolina. I couldn't do it. I wanted to. God, Nemesis, I wanted to fuck you out of my life for good. But there could never be anyone else. It is you that I love. It is you whom I want. It is you whom makes living a spectacular thing I want to experience, rather than participate in reluctantly every day.
I felt the tears sliding down my cheeks, fat and salty. We were so good at hurting each other. This had to stop. I kissed another, I whispered. I cheated on you.
I forgive you.
He cupped my cheeks in his big hands.
Forgive yourself, and let's move on. Come back home, Nem.
Nothing happened in that hotel room.
I don't give a fuck what happened between then and there. I believe you, but it makes no difference. I want to start this over. The right way.
I need time. The words broke me. Maybe because they were brutally honest. I needed time to digest everything that was happening, to make sure this was not just another grand gesture he was going to offer and forget about the next morning. We fell in love fast and slow, hard and soft, with everything we had in us, yet we both refused to give anything away. We didn't have time to digest what was happening. We clashed into each other's lives with our walls still up. We needed to start over. We needed to flirt. We needed to distribute the power between us, this time more equally. We needed to learn to fight without wounding each other, without running into other people's arms, without dragging and tossing each other into rooms like wild beasts. It should be my choice to be with you. You understand that, right? Wolf nodded, standing up before he changed his mind. I could tell it took a tremendous effort for him not to demand from me what he used to think he deserved. He made his way to the door, and I wanted to take the words back and go with him. But I couldn't. I had to be better for the person inside me. A person I was going to be able to save, like my mother couldn't. Wolf stopped at the threshold, his back still to me.
Can I call you?
Yes, I let out a breath. Can I text you?
You may. Can I book you an appointment with an OBGYN?
Yes. I laughed through the tears, wiping them quickly. He still didn't turn around to look at me. Wolf Keaton wasn't much of a negotiator, but for me, he broke his rules.
May I join you?
His voice was grave. You better. His shoulders quaked in a soft chuckle, and he finally turned around to face me.
Go on a date with me, Mrs. Keaton. Not a gala, not a charity event, not an official outing. A date.
God. Oh, yes. I would love that very much.
Good, he said,
looking down and chuckling to himself. I had to remind myself that this was the same cruel man from the masquerade, the one I swore to hate for the rest of my life. He looked up, his face still tilted down, with a shy yet devastated gaze.
Will I get lucky on that date?
I threw myself on my pillow, covering my face with my arm, the sound of my laughter drowning the click of the door as it closed. 2 days later, we paid our first visit to my new OBGYN. Barbara was in her 50s, with cropped blonde hair, kind eyes, and thick glasses. She did an ultrasound and showed us the peanut swimming in my womb. Its little pulse pitter-pattered like tiny bare feet down the stairs on Christmas morning. Wolf held my hand and stared at the screen as though we had just discovered a new planet. We went to lunch after that, our first public, unofficial outing as a couple. He invited me over to our house. I politely declined, explaining I made plans with Cher and Trisha from my study group. I tried to bite down my smile when I broke the news to him. I hadn't had friends my age ever since I moved back from Switzerland.
Nemesis.
He arched an eyebrow when he drove me back to my house.
Next thing I know, you'll be attending frat parties.
Don't hold your breath. Parties weren't my scene. Besides, the ones I was used to were fancy and demanded a dress code my pregnant self wasn't eager to follow. Even in my first trimester, I opted for loose, comfortable attire.
I think everyone needs to go to at least one frat party to see what all the fuss is about.
Would it bother you? I asked. I wanted to put across that he didn't have this kind of power over me anymore.
Not at all, unless Angelo is your date.
That was a fair request, which I could no longer deny. I took out my phone from my bag and tossed it into his hands. Check this.
What am I checking, exactly?
I deleted his number. He stopped the car in front of my house and killed the engine. He handed me back my phone.
I'll take your word for it. What changed your mind?
I rolled my eyes. I'm in love with this guy, and he has this idea in his head that I will run away with my childhood sweetheart. Wolf shot me a dirty look.
He is tragically in love with you, too, and I don't blame him for being adamant about keeping you.
There were many more dates between Wolf and me after that day. We went to the movies and to restaurants and even to hotel bars, in which we both didn't drink. Me because of my age and pregnancy, him out of solidarity. We shared a bowl of French fries and played pool and argued about books. I found out that my husband was a Stephen King fanatic. I was more of a Nora Roberts fan myself. We stopped at a bookstore and purchased each other books to read. We laughed when Wolf told me he nearly kicked the hatches out of our house that time they visited us because Brian had an erection as impressive as a baseball bat while I played the piano. Andrea, my cousin, called. She said that she'd been thinking, and she reached the conclusion she could no longer not speak to me just because my father didn't approve of the husband he himself chose for me. She asked for my forgiveness. I wasn't being a good Christian about it, doll, she snapped her gum in my ear. Come to think about it, I wasn't even a good manicurist about it. I bet you bit into those nails like nobody's business without me reminding you to stop chewing on them. I told her the truth. Forgiveness cost me nothing, and more than that, it enriched my soul. We met for a cappuccino the following day, and I bombarded her with all the 21st century questions that sat on my tongue. Some days later, Wolf announced that we were taking a weekend-long trip to visit Artemis. I wasn't in a condition to ride her, but I enjoyed taking care of her and making sure she was doing okay. A month ticked by, a month in which my husband called every morning to wake me up and every night to tell me goodnight. A month in which we didn't fight or cuss or slam doors. A month in which he did not withhold any information from me, and I did not refuse his every request simply because he'd made it. I let the EPAs escort me to school, didn't break protocol, and still managed to make a handful of friends. Wolf worked hard, but always made sure to put me first. I still wasn't wearing my engagement and wedding rings. I left them at his house the night he went to the black tie gala with Karolina Ivanova, but I never felt as if I belonged to someone else in my entire life more than now, ring or not. We fell back in lust, just as you do into a rabbit hole, fast and frantic. Wolf, I found out, was quite fond of having sex in unusual places. We had sex in his office and in a restroom at a wedding, on the bed in my old room when my parents weren't home, and against his bedroom window, watching over the pristine street. He fingered me under the table during an official black tie dinner and thrust himself into me without warning when I bent down after a shower to open the bottom drawer in the bathroom and retrieve my blow dryer. I loved every second of us in bed because no one ever needed to wonder when it was time to retreat back to their spot, their wing, or their house. We always fell asleep together and woke up together, insulated in this new, exciting thing called us. The morning I woke up with a small, visible bump in my lower belly, it felt hard and tough and exciting. My mother walked into my room and sat down on the edge of my bed.
I'm divorcing your father.
I had 1,000 things I wanted to tell her, from thank God to what took you so long. But I settled for a simple nod, squeezing her hand in mine to give her strength. I couldn't be more proud of her if I tried. She had a lot to lose, but she was willing to lose it anyway, if it meant winning back her freedom and voice.
I think I deserve more. I think I deserved more all along. I just didn't know that it could be possible. I know that now, through you, Vita Mia. Your happy ending inspired mine.
She wiped away a tear, forcing a smile on her face. My story hasn't ended just yet, I laughed. Not yet, she agreed with a wink. But I see where the plot is going.
Mama, I clutched her palm, tears brewing in my eyes. The best part of your story is yet to be written. You're doing the right thing. Clara and I helped Mama pack her bags. Clara suggested she should book a hotel. I shook my head. It was time for me to go back to where I belonged. And it was time for Wolf to play nice with both of our mothers, his and mine. I picked up the phone and called my husband. He answered on the first ring. I'm ready to come home.
Thank fuck, he breathed. What took you so long?
I needed to see that you meant it, that my freedom really was mine.
It is yours,
he said gravely.
It has always been yours.
Can Mama and Clara come stay with us for a while?
You can bring an entire hostile army into the house, and I'd still welcome them with open arms.
That evening, Wolf threw all our suitcases into the back of his car with Smithy's help. My father stood at the doorway and watched us with a glass of something strong. He did not say one thing. It didn't matter that Wolf bowed down to him for 10 seconds weeks ago. Senator Keaton was still the person who had won everything in the grand scheme of things. My father had lost, and the game was over. Once we got to the house, Ms. Sterling, I insisted on calling her Patricia now that I knew she was my mother-in-law, led my mother and Clara to the east wing to get settled. Wolf and I climbed up the stairs behind them. When we made it to the second floor, I turned toward my room. Is this real? I asked him.
It is real.
For the first time, it felt that way, too. We walked hand in hand to the west wing. We passed by his bedroom, entering the guest room next to it, where I'd slept the night we entertained the Hatches. My breath fluttered behind my ribcage when I realized what I was looking at when he opened the door. A nursery, all white and cream and soft yellows, bright and big and fully furnished. I cupped my mouth to stop myself from bawling. His acceptance of this baby somehow tore me apart. It was much more than his acceptance of his child. It was his acceptance of me.
Everything is changeable, he said. Well, other than the fact that we're having a baby.
It's perfect, I breathed. Thank you.
You were right. You're my wife. We'll sleep together. We'll live together.
There was a dramatic pause.
We'll even share a walk-in closet. I used some of the free space you so charitably made for me to accommodate your garments.
I laughed through my tears. This, right here, this was everything, beyond my wildest dreams. A man who loved me without asking for anything back. A man who suffered quietly as I was in love with another man and creeped on me, feeling by feeling, second by second, day by day. He was patient and determined, callous and overbearing. He watched me kiss and grind Angelo, all with his ring on my finger. He went down on his knees to beg the man who'd killed his family to bring me back to him. He did not think he could be a good father. But I knew, I wholeheartedly knew, that he would be the greatest dad in the entire world. I rose on my toes, pressing a kiss to my husband's delicious mouth. He tugged at my long hair.
Only you, he said.
Only you, I replied. Senator Wolf Keaton bent down on one knee and produced the engagement ring I'd left on my pillow weeks ago.
Be my wife, Nemesis. But know one thing. If you ever wish to leave, I will not clip your wings.
It was the easiest answer to the toughest question I'd ever been asked. I jerked my husband up by the collar, knowing damn well how much he hated the position in which he was lowered on the ground. My wings are not meant to fly, I whispered. They're meant to shield our family. Epilogue. Francesca. 4 years after.
I now baptize you in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, for the forgiveness of your sins and the gifts of the Holy Spirits.
Our second child, Joshua Romeo Keaton, was baptized in St. Raphael's Church in Little Italy in front of our friends and family just days after I received my undergraduate degree in law. I held Josh when the priest trickled holy water on his forehead, looking to my left at my husband, who cradled our very sleepy 3-year-old daughter, Emmeline. As I scanned the long wooden pews to look for the people who made my heart sing, I realized how incredibly blessed I was. I found my mother and her new beau, Charles, Charlie, Stevens, whom she'd been dating for the past 6 months. He held her hand in his and whispered softly in her ear. She pointed at sleepy Joshua in my arms, and they shared a chuckle. Next to them, Clara and Patricia, or Sterling, as my husband still insisted on calling her, were shedding happy tears, dabbing their faces with tissue. Andrea sat there with her new boyfriend, a made man named Mateo, and I knew, by the way they held hands, that this was the one guy she would let kiss her, next to some of my school friends and the new governor, Austin Berger. Missing in action, and not by accident, were the people who had loaded obstacles on Wolf's and my happily ever after, the people who pushed us together, yet tore us apart, each in their own way. My father was in prison, serving a 25-year sentence for attempted murder. Shortly after Mama came to live with us, he tried to take her life. He went mad after he realized her filing for divorce wasn't just a phase. Naturally, he blamed me and Wolf for her decision to better her life and leave her abusive husband, who'd left countless purple welts all over her body through their past few years together before I came back from Switzerland. Since Papa had paid some serious money to White under the table, and the latter had tried dragging his feet with collecting evidence against him when my mother's car blew up to the sky in front of Wolf's and my house, an internal, quiet investigation against White and Bishop took place, and the police chief and former governor were now on trial for receiving bribery and illegal campaign contributions from the infamous Arthur Rossi. During the media coverage of the high-profile case, the person who kept coming up in the news as an example for good morals was my husband, who married into the outfit, yet made sure not to have anything to do with my father or his business. I felt my husband's thumb swiping across my upper cheek as he wiped a tear of joy from my eye. He chucked me under the chin, then grinned. He'd made his way over to me without my even noticing. I was too wrapped up in how fortunate we were. Joshua fussed in my arms, and the priest took a step back and smoothed back his thin and velvety dark hair.
"He was made with God's love," Father Spina commented.
My husband scoffed beside me. He wasn't big on God, or people. He was big on me and our family. The priest stepped away, and my husband plastered his lips to my ear.
"While you did call me God, he was not present during the conception."
I chuckled, holding Josh to my chest and breathing in his pure scent of new life, shuddering with intense joy coursing through my veins.
"Are you ready to take the little ones home? I think they need their sleep."
My husband put a hand on my shoulder, our daughter fast asleep in the crook of his other arm. We decided to refrain from a big party after the baptism, seeing as our family was constantly in the news because of the trial. "They're not the only ones. I could use some sleep too," I murmured into my son's temple.
"Sterling and Clara can take care of Emmy and Josh, while I ruin what's left of your innocence."
"I think you did a thorough job the first week we met." I wiggled my brows, and he burst out laughing, something he'd learned how to do slowly after we got back together. "Besides, don't you need to fly out to D.C. this evening?"
"Canceled it.
How come?
I'm in the mood for spending time with my family.
Your country needs you, I teased.
And I need you.
He drew me into a hug, kids and all. Ms. Sterling still lived with us, even though she was given strict instructions to stop eavesdropping, a rule she was surprisingly good at following. Clara lived across the city in my mother's new house, but the two often helped with babysitting the kids together. Despite the fact my father was out of my life, I'd never felt more loved and protected by the people I cared about. And Wolf was entering an important stage in his career. His time as senator would come to an end in less than 2 years.
There's somewhere I want to take you tonight. Your pump is already packed and in the car.
He chucked my chin. This was my life now. From cheating and fighting and tearing each other apart, we moved to a ritual that was so domestically blissful, I was sometimes terrified of how happy I was. I am pink cotton candy at a fair, happy and bubbly and sweet. All fluff. Nothing says romance more than your husband packing your breast pump for you.
There's always the alternative if you just keep your mind open.
He was referring to our last visit to a restaurant, when I was so engorged I had to lock myself in the bathroom to pump myself manually into the toilet. He very kindly offered to drink the wasted milk. I wasn't even sure he was entirely kidding. Our plan sounds cryptic, I arched an eyebrow.
Perhaps, but it's fun.
He took Joshua from me, securing him in his baby seat before opening the car door for me. I got my driver's license shortly after I'd moved back in with Wolf. He was not the happiest to have me behind the wheel, or in a vehicle at all, for that matter, while pregnant and at odds with my father. Too worried about the baby and me. But he also knew I needed my freedom. After taking a lengthy nap, I slipped into an elegant red dress. Wolf drove us to Little Italy with Clara and Sterling staying with the kids. I wore matching matte red lipstick and a smile that didn't waver. Despite supporting my husband's ambitions, I couldn't deny my delight to hear he'd canceled his flight to D.C. to spend more time with us. We stopped in front of our Italian restaurant, Pasta Bella, and I unbuckled, about to get out. My husband had purchased Mama's pizza not too long after my father had been convicted of attempted murder. He gutted and refurbished it, liquidating the dark memories the walls and cracks inside it harbored. It was just another dinner date, then. Nice and cozy. A chance to unwind and maybe drink a glass of wine. Wolf put a hand on my thigh.
Confession time.
We just left the church, Wolf.
The only person I owe an explanation to is you.
Tell me, I smiled.
Angelo is about to announce his engagement to a girl he met at the accounting firm he works at.
Wolf ran his fingers along my arm, cocking his head in the restaurant's direction.
He's a little tight on money, so he reached out to ask if he could have it here. I said yes. My ulterior motive? I know that you've been feeling a little guilty, so I wanted you to see that he is fine.
My lips fell open in shock. In the months and years after I found out that I was pregnant with Emmy, I often agonized over the fact that Angelo hadn't moved on. He didn't have a girlfriend or date anyone seriously. Shortly before he got his master's degree, his father's accounting firm shut down after the IRS had found that they'd been laundering money for the outfit in the millions. Mike Bandini was firmly tucked away in prison now, serving 20 years. Angelo was still on good terms with his parents, from what my mother had told me. He certainly took care of his mama and brothers, but he had officially cut all ties with the outfit. It had been months since I'd asked Mama about him, and I guess he'd finally found someone. Wolf stared at me, trying to gauge my reaction. I could tell he didn't want to upset me, but I could also tell that he really wanted me not to have an over-emotional reaction one way or the other. Angelo was, and always would be, a sensitive subject in our marriage. I sliced him open by kissing Angelo in front of the entire world. He forgave, but I couldn't expect him to forget. I cracked a smile, yanking my husband into a hug. Thank you. That makes me so happy for him. And for me, too.
God, you're perfect,
my husband muttered, sealing our conversation with a kiss.
I took you hoping for vengeance. I never thought I'd receive something so much more powerful. Love.
He got out, rounded the car, and opened the door for me. Together, we walked into Pasta Bella, hand in hand. The only person I hadn't thought about today, as nostalgia flooded me, was Kristen Reese, the woman who orchestrated two of the worst days of my life. I knew we wouldn't be bumping into her. After she cornered me at school, Wolf had finally picked up the phone and answered her. He helped her find a job in Alaska, then proceeded to make her sign a contract more restricting than a restraining order. Reese was not to return to the state of Illinois and seek us out. She gave him her word that she was done messing with our family.
What are you thinking about?
My husband asked as he pushed the door to the restaurant open. Buttery, liquid light enveloped us immediately. Candles and red tablecloths and rich wood everywhere. The place was packed, and among the bobbing heads and laughter, I found Angelo, his arm draped over the shoulder of a beautiful girl with long black hair and slanted eyes. We walked toward them. I'm thinking about how happy you make me, I said frankly. We stopped 2 feet from Angelo. He turned around and smiled at me, happiness shining from his blue ocean eyes. We made it, I whispered. Apart.
You look beautiful, Francesca Rossi.
Angelo pulled me by the collar for a slow, suffocating hug, whispering in my ear,
but not as beautiful as my future wife.
Wolf. 6 years after. I watched my wife from what used to be her bedroom window many, many years ago, my hand caressing the wooden box where Emmeline, it was her room now, kept all her seashells. Francesca and I had agreed early into parenthood that we didn't want to continue her family tradition of the notes. Too much pressure and confusion. My eyes followed my wife as she said goodbye to her favorite vegetable garden that she had tended to for over a decade, with Josh and Emmeline hugging each of her hips and little Christian in her arms. Sterling was there too, rubbing my wife's shoulder with a smile. Later on tonight, we were going to board a plane that would take us to D.C. I was going to start serving my country the way I'd dreamed about since I was an orphan, as the President of the United States. We had dreams to chase, a country to serve, and a lifetime to love each other more fiercely and strongly than we did the last year. But as I looked down at her, I knew, without a shadow of a doubt, that my decision to steal her under the starless Chicago sky 10 years ago was the best choice I'd made. I loved my country ferociously. I loved my wife more.
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Kiss Thief. Written by L.J. Shen. Performed by Savannah Peachwood and Stephen Dexter. Executive producers Rena Ayer and Mike Charzik. Producer Chelsea Pita. Copyright 2019 by L.J. Shen. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.